Thank you. All right, we're on appeal number 09-1334, United States versus Dennis Oglesby, and we have Mr. Alvarado.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm Rob Alvarado. I'm with the Federal Defenders in Peoria. Your Honors, the Peoria police officers who did the frisk of Mr. Oglesby in this case were part of a proactive street crimes unit.
Tell me, what's going on in Peoria? We have three of our six cases today from Judge Mim in Peoria.
I noticed that. Judge Mim is on the hot seat today, I guess. Yeah. But the Peoria police officers were a proactive unit. What they were doing is actively searching for guns and drugs. That explains why it took four police officers to surround four young men who were standing at a bus stop, waiting for a bus, standing on a sidewalk, allegedly blocking the public way. That explains why there was that kind of show of force. The officer said, well, we operate on the principle of mass. We bring as many people to bear to the situation as we can. But what they did, in less than a minute's time, they took every little fact that Mr. Oglesby showed in his behavior that was different from the rest of the crowd, and they used that to justify the frisk of him. But what they didn't do was show that those facts, those behaviors that set him apart, they didn't show how that made him armed or dangerous, which is the requirement under the Fourth Amendment for this kind of frisk. What they said was he backed away 3 to 5 steps from the two officers who surprised them, by the way, not just walked up to them, but surprised them, that he kept his body at a 45-degree angle from those two officers, even though the officers who were driving up from behind could clearly see that Mr. Oglesby had nothing in his hands. He wasn't making aggressive moves towards the officers. He wasn't nervous. He wasn't sweating. He wasn't holding on to his clothing as if he had something heavy in his hands. He didn't even show any bulges in his clothing, which might indicate that he was carrying a gun. But based on those very few meager facts and the fact that they said...
That was one thing. They thought the clothing he was wearing was so loose-fitting, baggy, and it turned out he did have a gun in his waistband, of course, but that was one thing that they were concerned about. I mean, I agree with you that they're cobbling together a lot of different facts here to support the minimal requirement of a Terry stop.
Well, that's exact.
But just because they couldn't see anything, to me, isn't determinative here, because that was a factor they considered, that the clothing was so bulky and loose-fitting.
Right. They did say he was wearing baggy clothing, which a lot of young men wear these days. And that was just one more fact that they threw into the hopper to try to justify the frisk. But, Your Honors, it kind of reminds me of something that we in downstate Illinois do when we're hunting pheasants. When you hunt pheasants, you try to do something startling to get the birds to break cover and then take flight. And that's exactly what happened here. They had four officers who surround these four men who are basically doing nothing except standing there. And then when the one man starts to separate himself from the crowd, they zero in on him.
There's nothing unconstitutional about that.
I'm sorry?
There's nothing unconstitutional about that.
No, there isn't, but you still have to have the facts supporting reasonable suspicion that he was armed and or dangerous. It's not just enough that he's acting different from the crowd.
Well, the combination of his behaviors persuaded Judge Mim that he was protecting his right side, and the combination of behaviors included how he positioned himself, the backing away, the up and down with the hands when he's told to show his hands, and that combination of behaviors.
Well, it did persuade Judge Mim, but even Judge Mim said it was a very close case.
No question.
In fact, I believe he said it wouldn't have been surprising to him if this court were to reverse his decision. But he found that in that case it was enough. But frankly, it was the subjective opinions and testimony of the officers that carried the day. It wasn't a reasonable, objective police officer's. I don't think it would have been a reasonable, objective police officer who would have taken those meager facts in a very short time, which is like a snapshot of this person's behavior when there are three or four other people and they are interacting with all of them. In that very brief time, in that very brief snapshot, I don't believe a reasonably objective officer could find that Mr. Oglesby was armed and or dangerous at that time. And so, Your Honors, if you have no further questions, I'll reserve my time for rebuttal.
Very well. Thank you. Mr. Hartzler, back again.
And just so you don't take it out on Peoria, you have three cases from the Central District because I requested for my personal convenience and for cost savings to the taxpayer that we schedule three cases.
We salute you for that.
And I appreciate the
accommodation. Tell Judge Mim that he took up 50% of our oral argument time today.
I thought the third case was actually Judge Scott's. I think that's a Springfield case. Is it not, that Neff case?
No, they're all Judge Mim is on another case.
Oh, a third case.
The fifth case, actually, we're taking it under advisement.
That's Judge Mimos.
With the oral argument was waived in it. But
right, right.
So three of our six cases are from Judge Mim. Well, I understand it's just taken senior status.
He's been working pretty hard lately.
I can see that.
There are two features of this case that I hope the court will pay particular note to, and they illustrate important aspects of Fourth Amendment jurisprudence. And one is the importance of experience, and the other is the value of balance, reasonableness balance. Regarding the importance of experience, I'm referring to the experience of the police officers on the street. Prior to receiving this appeal and handling, reading the transcript, I was not at all familiar with the concept of bladed stance. And I don't know that that gets repeated in either of our briefs, but if you review the transcript, you'll see that one of the police officers refers to Oglesby as taking a bladed stance as he moved away. And, of course, I looked up to see what bladed stance is, and maybe you already know, but my opposing counsel here has sort of demonstrated it. It's as he walked away, he shielded his right side, the side that had the gun, from the police officers. And based on the officer's experience, because that's the very way that they stand when they are trying to shield their gun from somebody that they're confronting or arresting, they drew an inference that he was concealing something there in his waistband and his right side. And as you've hopefully discerned from our brief, there are a number of other factors and facts that they put together based on their experience, one being that he segregated himself from the rest of the men that were there near the bus stop. He was the only one that walked away. He walked away slowly. They articulated that. He looked from side to side. The police officers articulated that. And, of course, most threatening of all was while wearing baggy pants, he placed his hand at least a couple of times on his right side in his waist area. So they articulated facts which gave them reasonable suspicion to believe what? That he had a gun there on his right side in his waistband. And so the second feature of this case that I hope the court has noticed is the value of the reasonableness balance. This is not a situation in which they're investigating a drug offense and they concluded that he's a drug dealer or a burglar, as in Terry, for example, where they're casing the stores and they did a full-fledged frisk of the man. The opposing brief refers to it as a frisk, but the truth of the matter is that this was an unbelievably reasonable, exceedingly limited touch of his right waistband. The officer came up behind him, grabbed his waist, and touched him on the right side and immediately found the gun. So in terms of doing the reasonableness balance, you evaluate what the reasonable suspicion was to believe that he had a firearm. And then the question is, what was the intrusion? And the intrusion was about as slight as it could be based on what the officers reasonably suspected from all the circumstances based on their experience, including the bladed stance, which frankly would have been meaningless to me had I seen it. I would have had no idea what the bladed stance was or what the significance of it was. But bear in mind that the officers also demonstrated what was going on to Judge Mim. So Judge Mim was able to see the demonstration in the courtroom and relied upon that to conclude that there was reasonable suspicion that he was carried a firearm on his right side. Based on all of that, I think this is a model of good police conduct in this situation, and also a model of the appropriate reasonableness balance and the restraint of the officers in conducting their search, and I hope that the court will affirm Judge Mim in this case.
Can you touch upon briefly about officer asking for ID?
One of the officers asked for ID, and you recall from the transcript that the police officer, one of the police officers said that as soon as he saw, 20 seconds after that, I believe it was, that Oglesby placed his hand back down to his right side. When the officer said, "Show me your hands again," he said, "Well, I was asked to show ID." And the police officer said he thought he was just using that as an excuse to reach and check his weapon again, make sure it was, you know, secure in his waistband. So I don't think that the fact that Mr. Oglesby was asked for ID would negate all of the inferences that police could reasonably draw. In other words, yes, there could be some innocent explanation for some of the conduct, but taken as a totality, I think it was reasonable for the officers to suspect that in those circumstances, this man had a gun on his right side in his waistband.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Alvarado.
Your Honor raised a very interesting point. At first, the officers, when they came up to the scene, they asked for identification from the men, and then they asked for them to show their hands. Mr. Oglesby showed his hands at least twice immediately when the officers asked him to do that. I don't see how in the world that can be construed as somehow indicative that he's armed and dangerous. So when he went to his pocket, when he went to the right side of his body, and the officer said, "Show your hands again," he said, "Well, you asked for ID." Perfectly innocent. But that's why, in this case, the officers took those little things in less than a minute's time, and they made that into reasonable suspicion. Now,
But Mr. Oglesby didn't say to the officer, "I'm going to hand you my ID, but I want to let you know I have a gun in my pocket."
Well, of course he did. But, you know, that's the interesting thing about what Mr. Hartzler said. He said, "Well, this was a very minimal intrusion, and we did recover a gun." Well, of course, the fruits of this search don't support the search and make it any more within the Fourth Amendment to do it. But the troubling thing is, how many times do these same officers in this proactive unit take these very minimal behaviors on the part of citizens and place their hands on them and search them, and then they find nothing? We'll never know that, because there won't be a case where lawyers can cross-examine these officers and determine that. It's very troubling, especially when you see the very aggressive way they approach this very minor ordinance violation.
How many people were there?
There were four or five.
Other than officers?
There were four or five.
Did the officers?
There were four
risk
officers.
Anybody else?
The record is unclear about that. There was one man that had an open bottle of alcohol, and Mr. Oglesby was the farthest away from the group of men, and he took 3 to 5 steps away from that person. Now, Mr. Hartzler says, well, he's the only one that was trying to leave the scene for this very minor violation. Well, what's wrong with that? He had a perfect right to do that.
But based upon your statement that how many times officers would have touched someone or frisked someone who didn't have a gun, in this case, based on the representations made to the district court judge, all the factors, based on what he did, Mr. Oglesby, they frisk him, not the other individuals.
We don't know. The record is unclear whether there were other individuals that were frisked. We know for a fact that Mr. Oglesby was frisked, and frankly, when they found the gun, that drew the officer's attention to Mr. Oglesby. And obviously that was the correct thing to do once they found the gun. But at least two people were arrested in that group that night, the man with the open alcohol and Mr. Oglesby. Your Honors, I have no further statements unless the court has any other questions.
I guess we don't. Thank you. The case will be taken under advisement.